Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed, so I call your name.
Signs of Life Radio. I'm here with our co-hosts for the evening, Tom and Melissa Gould and Fran Ginsberg, and I'm Bob Ginsberg, and tonight's discussion is going to be about credible accounts of the afterlife from near-death experiences. And we've got a ton of things to discuss in that regard. The show sponsor tonight is the Comlock Center, and you can find them in comlock.com. And right now, we'll ask Fran to bring us up to date.
I am happy to do that. We want to remind our listeners to check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, for all the latest events and happenings. And coming up free this month for our members on June 4th, that's in the past.
Yeah.
Oh, that happened already.
It was great.
Well, then, so the Cold Spring Harbor, New York Afterlife Discussion Group was great. We had 20-some-odd people there, and the discussion was very, very intense, wonderful, and enlightening. Okay, let's move on to June 8th, which is this coming Saturday. That has not happened yet. But we're predicting that it's going to be another great afterlife discussion group, the first meeting of the Brookline, Massachusetts Afterlife Discussion Group. They'll meet at the Spirit of Light in the downstairs meeting room on June 8th from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern. And then also on June 8th, our regular Visionary Explorers Group, which is our online meeting, they'll meet from 11 to noon Pacific time, from 2 to 3 Eastern time, and you could calculate anything in between if you plan on attending this meeting. Our next webinar is scheduled for June 26th, that's also in the future, at 9 p.m. Eastern, and will feature Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Janet Mayer, Joe Peretta, and Joseph Scheel, hosted by Kimberly Saavedra, and they will be discussing the attributes that need to be present when selecting a medium. And they will field questions from the attendees live during the webinar. It starts at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Please calculate the time for wherever you are in the world. And we have a limited number of free member-only seats for our listeners using the code MEDIUMS2019. And for our non-members listeners, please use the code HOW2-2019 for half-price seats. The annual Summer Grief Retreat, Love Knows No Death, is open for enrollment. Be sure to grab one of the remaining seats to this great weekend, where attendees work in small groups with certified mediums Rebecca Ann LoCicero, Siri Bernstein, and Joe Scheel, along with Dr. Mo Hanna and a caring staff of facilitators assisting in transforming your grief. This special weekend is scheduled for July 26th through 28th. In Chester, Connecticut, where you will learn that the mystery of death is not a mystery at all, but a doorway to another chapter of continuing life. It is easy to get to by train, plane, or automobile. And please help keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. You can always help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, and great nonprofits. And if you follow us on YouTube, our channel for great stories and videos is youtube.com/afterlifeeducation. Back to you, Bob.
Are we in the present or the future or
it's all happening at the same time.
We're out of body right now. Melissa's right. It's all happening at the same time.
So we were going to talk about, credible accounts of near-death experiences and why are we doing that. And by the way, what we're going to do is, as a means of discussion, there are a bunch of accounts that are considered to be profound, and we printed some of them out and we'll be reading them. And why is it important? I guess we should start with you know, we make the assumption everybody knows what a near-death experience is, and I'm sure that our listeners do, but just a short recap for those who may not be familiar with it, people that are clinically dead or even sometimes have a in a situation where they feel that death is going to be imminent, have these experiences that can't be explained really by science, where they do things like they leave the body and they see things that are going on. They visit deceased loved ones that they have descriptions of the afterlife. They have access to unlimited knowledge. Some describe going through a tunnel. The knowledge of future events that are yet to come, a whole bunch of things. And not every, I don't want to suggest that every near-death experience or experiences them all. Some may have one or two or, you know, or all. But there are common things to them. And the most important thing about a near-death experience is that these experiencers come back and a lot of them change their lives because they no longer think of themselves the way they used to. They see the most important thing is that they don't have a fear of death, which is really important to us. So some of the things that we're talking about are veridical near-death experiences. People come back with information that they could not have, information that's verified that they could not have obtained by any normal means. So why is it all important? I think it's all important because if we come to the, if we believe that these are true accounts of people visiting the afterlife, who else do we have that we can get that information from? Nobody that I could think of, right? You can go to channel reports in the literature from the mediums, mostly, you know, 100 years ago, but these are people that talk about being in gardens and seeing what's going on in the afterlife. So in a sense, they may be our modern day mystics and prophets, the same way that the shamans and the great period people in history were. Mm-hmm. So that I think that's the reason we go. Now, some of these are quite long, and I don't want to, I was going to start off with one, from Pam Reynolds, which is a classic case, but I think that'll take a while. So there are a couple of shorter ones.
Start with Pam Reynolds.
Well, and because it'll take
quite
a while.
Leave us all hanging during the commercial.
All right, well, let's set it up. The case with Pam Reynolds in 1991, at the age of 35, she underwent a rare operation to remove a giant they call it a basilar artery aneurysm in her brain that threatened her life. The size and location of the aneurysm made it that they couldn't remove it safely using standard neurosurgical techniques. She was referred to a specialist, a neurosurgeon named Dr. Robert Spetzler. He had pioneered a daring surgical procedure known as deep hypothermic cardiac arrest, which it allowed Pam's aneurysm to be excised with a reasonable chance of success. The operation was nicknamed Standstill because it required that Pam's body temperature be lowered to 60 degrees, her heartbeat and breathing stopped, her brain waves flattened, and the blood drained from her head. So in everyday terms, she was put to death. And after removing the aneurysm, she was restored to life. And during that time that she was in this standstill state, she experienced a near-death experience. It's considered to be one of the strongest cases. While all her vital signs were stopped, the doctor turned on a surgical saw and began to cut through Pam's skull. While this was going on, Pam reported that she felt herself pop outside her body and hover above the operating table. Then she watched the doctors working on her lifeless body for a while, and from her out-of-body position, she observed the doctor soaring into her skull with what looked like an electric toothbrush. she heard and reported later what the nurses in the operating room had said and exactly what was happening during the operation. At this time, every monitor attached to Pam's body registered no life whatsoever. At some point, Pam's consciousness floated out of the operating room and traveled down a tunnel, which had a light at the end of it where her deceased relatives and friends were waiting, including her long-dead grandmother and other relatives. Her NDE ended when her deceased uncle led her back to her body for her to re-enter it, and she compared the feeling of re-entering her dead body to plunging into a pool of ice. So we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, Pam's account in her own words, which is pretty amazing, we'll discuss that. We'll read it and discuss it. So stay with us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's Hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. And we're talking about near-death experiences. Credible accounts of near-death experiences. So before the break, so I was setting up the famous Pam Reynolds case. So here's, bear in mind, so she's totally dead by every medical definition. And here's the account in her own words. She said, "The next thing I recall was the sound. It was a natural D. As I listened to the sound, I felt it was pulling me out of the top of my head. The further out of my body I got, the more clear the tone became. I had the impression it was like a road, a frequency that you go on. I remember seeing several things in the operating room when I was looking down. It was the most aware thing that I have ever been in my entire life. I was metaphorically sitting on the doctor's shoulder. It was not like a normal vision. It was brighter and more focused and clearer than normal vision. There was so much in the operating room that I didn't recognize than so many people. I thought the way they had my head shaved was very peculiar. I expected them to take all of the hair, but they didn't. The saw thing that I hated the sound of looked like an electric toothbrush, and it had a dent in it, a groove at the top where the saw appeared to go into the handle, but it didn't. And the saw had interchangeable blades, too, but these blades were in what looked like a socket wrench case. I heard the saw crank up. I didn't see them use it on my head, but I think I heard it being used on something. It was humming at a relatively high pitch, and all of a sudden it went burr like that. Someone said something about my veins and arteries being very small. I believe it was a female voice and that it was Dr. Murray, but I'm not sure. She was the cardiologist. I remember thinking that I should have told her about that. I remember the heart-lung machine. I didn't like the respirator. I remember a lot of tools and instruments that I didn't readily recognize. There was a sensation like being pulled, but not against your will. I was going on my own accord because I wanted to go. I have different metaphors to try to explain this. It was like the Wizard of Oz being taken up in a tornado vortex, only you're not spinning around like you've got vertigo. You're very focused and you have a place to go. The feeling was like going up in an elevator real fast, and there was a sensation, but it wasn't a bodily physical sensation. It was like a tunnel, but it wasn't a tunnel. At some point early in the tunnel vortex, I became aware of my grandmother calling me, but I didn't hear her call me with my ears. It was a clearer hearing than with my ears. I trust that sense more than I trust my own ears. The feeling was that she wanted me to come to her, so I continued with no fear down the shaft. It's a dark shaft that I went through, and at the very end there was this very little tiny pinpoint of light that kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The light was incredibly bright, like sitting in the middle of a light bulb. It was so bright that I put my hands in front of my face, fully expecting to see them, and I could not, but I knew that they were there, not from a sense of touch. Again, it's terribly hard to explain, but I knew they were there. I noticed as I began to discern different figures in the light, and they were all covered with light. They were light, and I had light permeating all around them. They began to form shapes I could recognize and understand. I could see that one of them was my grandmother. I don't know if it was reality or a projection, but I would know my grandmother, the sound of her, anytime, anywhere. Everyone I saw, looking back on it, fit perfectly into my understanding of what that person looked like at their best during their lives. I recognized a lot of people. My Uncle Gene was there. So was my great Aunt Maggie, who was really a cousin. On Papa's side of the family, my grandfather was there. They were specifically taking care of me, looking after me. They would not permit me to go further. It was communicated to me, that's the best way I know how to say it, because they didn't speak like I'm speaking, that if I went all the way into the light, something would happen to me physically. They would be unable to put this me back in the body me, like I had gone too far, and they couldn't reconnect. So they wouldn't let me go anywhere or do anything I wanted to go into the light, but I also wanted to come back. I had children to be reared. It was like watching a movie on fast forward on your VCR. You get the general idea, but the individual freeze frames are not slow enough to get the detail. Then the deceased relatives were feeding me. They were not doing this through my mouth like with food, but they were nourishing me with something. The only way I know how to put it is something sparkly. Sparkles is the image that I get. I definitely recall the sensation of being nurtured and being fed and being made strong. I know it sounds funny because obviously it wasn't a physical thing, but inside the experience I felt physically strong, ready for whatever. My grandmother didn't take me back through the tunnel or even send me back or ask me to go. She just looked up at me. I expected to go with her, but it was communicated to me that she just didn't think she would do that. My uncle said he would do it. He's the one who took me back through the end of the tunnel. Everything was fine. I did want to go. But then I got to the end of it, and I saw the thing, my body. I didn't want to get into it. It looked terrible, like a train wreck. It looked like what it was, dead. I believe it was covered. It scared me, and I didn't want to look at it. It was communicated to me that it was like jumping into a swimming pool. No problem, just jump right into the swimming pool. I didn't want to, but I guess I was late or something because he, the uncle, pushed me. I felt a definite repelling and at the same time a pulling from the body. The body was pulling and the tunnel was pushing. It was like diving into a pool of ice water. It hurt. When I came back, they were playing Hotel California, and the line was, "You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave." I mentioned to Dr. Brown that that was incredibly insensitive, and he told me that I needed to sleep more. When I regained consciousness, I was still on the respirator. So
that is something.
You know, it really is an amazing account, and it encompasses so many of the things that some of the other stuff that we'll be reading tonight. You know, seeing a light off in the distance, the deceased relatives communicating, not with voice, but telepathically, you know.
Feeling the hands, but the hands weren't there. But
right.
She had hands.
Right, and something about the way that she was getting information. Of course, when she came back, all these things that we're talking about, she mentioned, and that's why the doctors were so amazed. She described the source. She described the goings on, you know, and everything else. So it's a significant case because it's one of the few times that the doctors could document every step of the way, you know, just how dead she was, you know. Mm-hmm. So and even these things she was hearing, some people would say, well, it's possible maybe you still have hearing when you're in that state, but she had earplugs in and her eyelids would tape shut. You know, so that kind of, you know.
But everything is dead.
Right.
So you can't hear anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So I
just, one thing jumped out at me when you were reading the story. Like, she says that if I went all the way into the light, something would happen to me physically. They would be unable to put me back into the body.
Yeah.
That makes me think of the mediums who exude ectoplasm. And they say that they can't do it in the light because they won't be able to get it back into them. That just seems like an interesting parallel.
Yeah, maybe. I just thought of it as, you know, the light is, think of the light as the afterlife. So
right.
If you get fully immersed into the afterlife, instead of being straddling both worlds, that you're already past the point of not coming back.
So if ectoplasm reacted to light because it really comes, but the assumption is it comes from the other side, then its reaction to light, even though it's light from the physical world, maybe they're right. Maybe it is damaging. Or maybe they're reading it the wrong way and it's not damaging. They're just afraid to do it because of that.
Could be.
Yeah, we don't know.
It just seemed like an interesting parallel that she brought up.
Melissa, there's a discussion about, you know, another account with an out-of-body experience.
Sure.
Read that one.
Out-of-body experiences provide compelling evidence for the validity of the near-death experience, as numerous stories recalled by subjects have been independently corroborated. One of the strongest case studies supporting veridical perception was recorded by Kenneth Ring, psychologist and co-founder of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, commonly referred to as IANS. Ring's subject, Maria, was a migrant worker visiting Seattle for the first time. While visiting, she was rushed to the hospital after suffering a massive heart attack. While recuperating in the coronary care unit, she went into cardiac arrest and was declared clinically dead. She was successfully resuscitated a few minutes later. Maria related her out-of-body experience to Kimberly Clark, her critical care social worker. Maria described herself rising above her body and floating to a window on the third floor of the hospital's north wing. Sitting on the window ledge was a man's left-footed blue sneaker, which she described in minute detail as having a worn little toe and shoelace tucked under its sole. Anxious to corroborate her story, she asked Kimberly to search for the sneaker. Kimberly located the blue sneaker on the third floor ledge, exactly as Maria had described it. In recounting the story, Kimberly stated, the only way she could have had such a perspective, was if she had been floating right outside and at very close range to the tennis shoe. I retrieved the shoe and brought it back to Maria. It was very concrete evidence for me, Ring contends. Now, on hearing a case like this, one has to ask, what is the probability that a migrant worker visiting a large city for the first time, who suffers a heart attack and is rushed to a hospital at night, would, while having a cardiac arrest, simply hallucinate seeing a tennis shoe with very specific and unusual features on the ledge of a floor higher than her physical location in the hospital? Only an arch skeptic, I think, would say anything much other than not bloody likely.
So, you know, talk about going out of body, right? I mean, you're having an experience, you're on a different floor, and how else do you come up with a logical explanation? Unless you could say that somehow she visited the hospital before and was at a building across the street and then had binoculars and saw this, you know, it's preposterous.
And stressing that she, you know, several times that she was a migrant farm worker, the likelihood of her being right in that vicinity for another reason is slim.
Right. So there were a couple of, and I know Tom's got an interesting one to read here too, but Fran, there's a couple of, you know, just short ones that give examples.
Yeah.
If you could,
We've got an elderly woman who had been blind since childhood, but during her near-death experience, the woman had regained her sight. This is during the near-death experience, and she was able to accurately describe the instruments and techniques used during the resuscitation of her body. After the woman was revived, she reported the details to her doctor. She was able to tell the doctor who came in and out, what they said, what they wore, what they did, all of which was true. Her doctor then referred the woman to Moody, who he knew was doing research at the time on near-death experiences, and that's Dr. Raymond Moody.
Right. There was one on Al Sullivan right underneath that.
You want another one right now?
Yeah.
Okay. So during an emergency coronary bypass surgery at Hartford Hospital in Connecticut, Al Sullivan had the clear sensation of leaving his body. In a report he wrote, he said he rose to an amphitheater-like place. While seeing what happened to be an otherworldly scene, including his brother-in-law and mother who had died, he was able to look back to this world and see his body with the chest opened up and his heart exposed. This is a quote. I was able to see my surgeon, who just moments ago had explained to me what he was going to do during my operation. He appeared to be somewhat perplexed. I thought he was flapping his arms as if trying to fly. It was this part of the account that started Sullivan's cardiologist, Dr. Anthony LaSala, who had dismissed the rest of the story as a drug-induced hallucination. Dr. Hiroshi Takata, indeed, had a habit of flapping his elbows, as Sullivan described, directing medical staff this way to avoid touching anything after he had scrubbed in. NDE, near-death experience researcher Dr. Bruce Grayson spoke with Dr. LaSala and Dr. Takata in 1997 to confirm the report. Dr. Takata said this is a habit of his. Dr. LaSala confirmed that Sullivan had told him the story and that Dr. Takata's habit of flapping his arms this way is unusual. It is not something he has seen any other surgeon do. Grayson also verified that Sullivan would have witnessed this after the anesthesia had kicked in and he was, by all appearances, unconscious.
Yeah, and I think I remember Bruce Grayson telling that account at our conference once I think you could probably find a YouTube on that something, but it's significant because how many surgeons flap their arms like a chicken. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. He was interesting. He scrubbed up, and so he didn't want to have his hands.
Yeah, it makes sense when after he explained it, but, you know, it kind of refutes the notion that the guy was guessing, because that's something that nobody else does, right?
Right.
And Tom, this one here, I know it takes place a long time ago, but it was... It was pretty about a medical officer in World War One.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. A medical officer was stationed in France during World War One and was flying to the aid of a wounded pilot. However, not long after taking off, the doctor's plane crashed. The crash site could not be seen from the hangars, and the hangars likewise could not be seen from the crash site because they were separated by the crest of two slopes. The doctor's own words were recounted by Lieutenant Colonel Frederick John Marion Stratton, a professor of astrophysics at the University of Cambridge, Stratton, in a 1957 article titled An Out-of-Body Experience Combined with ESP, published in the Journal of the Society for Psychical Research. And I'm quoting the doctor. He said, "While I was up above my body, it did not seem in the least queer that I could see a number of activities at the hangars. The Crossley tender, which is an ambulance, started out of the hangar in which it was garaged. When about a car or a car and a half length outside the hangar, the engine stalled. I saw the chauffeur jump out and pull the starting handle. Then he raced back to his driving seat and started off towards the crash over the crest. While this small episode was occurring, my medical orderly had rushed out of my nearby medical hut and jumped into the back of the Crossley tender. The ambulance, or tender, then stopped again, but this time it was the orderly who jumped out, rushed into the medical hut, and came out with something extra, and jumped into the ambulance, which then resumed its twice interrupted journey." Now, the doctor told all of this to his commanding officer at the hospital after recovering, enough to realize the significance of what he'd seen. The officer recorded it and verified that the ambulance journey did, in fact, begin this way. Now, there's a real problem for me, as I'm trying to tell you this, me being the doctor, because all the worlds I know are three-dimensional. As I was going through this, I kept thinking, well, when I was taking geometry, they always told me that there were three dimensions, and I always just accepted that. But they were wrong. There are more. And of course, our world, the one we're living in now, is three-dimensional. But the next one definitely isn't. And that's why it's so hard to tell you this. I have to describe it to you in words that are three-dimensional. That's as close as I can get to it, but it's not really adequate. I can't really give you a complete picture.
Right. So this occurred way before the term near-death experience was coined.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's talking about what we're talking about today, about the reality that there are more dimensions than what our physical senses can perceive. Pretty interesting.
Yeah. Back then, they probably all wrote him off as a wackadoodle.
Yeah.
Right? Now, at least we have some science behind this.
That's true. That's true. There's a couple more there, Fran. You want to talk about the one where the person had after a head injury, had no vital signs?
Okay. At the point of injury, there was a momentary flash of pain, but then all the pain vanished. I had the feeling of floating in a dark space. The day was bitterly cold, yet while I was in that blackness, all I felt was warmth and the most extreme comfort I have ever experienced. I remember thinking, I must be dead. There's another, resuscitated after a heart attack. Can we go on with that?
Yeah.
I began to experience the most wonderful feelings. I couldn't feel a thing in the world except peace, comfort, ease, just quietness. I felt that all my troubles were gone, and I thought to myself, well, how quiet and peaceful, and I don't hurt at all.
Wow. Pleasant thought.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
About it all being peaceful and loving and comfortable. And
so a lot of people wonder about the near-death experiences, see pets, you know, in their experiences, and we have another account on that. So Melissa will do that as soon as we come back from our break. So stay with us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Am I Psychic is a mobile app designed using statistics, science, and parapsychological protocols to test psychic ability using fun games. Each game has two unique modes. In psychokinesis mode, influence the game using mind over matter ability. In extrasensory perception mode, guess which random option will be chosen. Am I Psychic can store your results in an anonymous database used to eventually publish in academic journals. Available on the App Store and Google Play. Go to amipsychicapp.com and be a part of proving psychic phenomena to the world. Some profits will be donated to the Rhine Research Center.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
We all grieve in different ways, and let's face it, grief hurts. Losing a loved one is usually the hardest event we will ever face. We can throw our hands up and become hardened by our grief, or we can take positive steps to transform it. Love knows no death. A groundbreaking and powerful grief transformation method can be what you've been looking for to provide some peace and understanding. It was created and written by medical doctor and professor Dr. Piero Calvi Perazzetti, and it's a combination of a self-help workbook and video course. The workbook has the power to lessen grief and foster significant healing, and has already helped countless people to not only lead productive lives, but to do so with the knowledge that they will indeed see their loved ones again. The workbook could be purchased for $19.95 on Amazon or on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org grief and loss page, where a digital version is also available for $9.95. Love knows no death. Truer words have never been spoken.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the gathering. We're discussing credible accounts of the afterlife from near-death experiences. And before we took our break, I mentioned we were curious about the people see pets in the afterlife when they have a near-death experience. So Melissa, why don't you tell us about this account from Bryce Bond?
All righty. Well, several years before his death, Bryce Bond, who was a famous New York City media personality turned parapsychologist, collapsed after a violent allergic reaction to pine nuts and was rushed to a hospital. He remembered suddenly passing through a long tunnel toward a brilliant light. "I hear a bark," he says, "and racing toward me is a dog I once had, a black poodle named Peppy. When I see him, I feel an emotional floodgate open. Tears fill my eyes. Peppy jumps into my arms, licking my face. As I hold him, he is real, more real than I had ever experienced him. I can smell him, feel him, hear his breathing, and sense his great joy at being with me again. I put my dog on the ground and step forward to embrace my stepfather when I hear a very strong voice in my consciousness. "Not yet," it says. I scream out, "Why?" And then this inner voice says, "What have you learned? And whom have you helped?" I'm dumbfounded. The voice seems to be from without as well as within. Everything stops for a moment. I have to think of what was asked of me. I cannot answer what I have learned, but I can answer whom I have helped. I feel the presence of my dog around me as I ponder those two questions. Then I hear barking, and other dogs appear, dogs I once had. As I stand there for what seems to be an eternity, I want to embrace and be absorbed and merge. I want to stay. The sensation of not wanting to come back is overwhelming. Bryce also reports that he was greeted by all of his relatives who had passed on before him. He experienced these loved ones as somewhat younger in form and face than when he had last seen them, healthier and happier too. He remembered racing backward through the same tunnel he had entered when it was time to leave and reviving in time to witness a hypodermic needle being plunged into his arm. I heard a voice say, "Welcome back." I never asked who said that, nor did I care. I was told by the doctor that I had been dead for over 10 minutes. Does that go on, Bob? Is that...
No, that was the
wrap up of that story.
That story. Yeah, that was... So there's your answer. You know, we're greeted by the consciousness of our pets.
Oh, I've heard that before too, and it's, you know, that's very reassuring to people.
A couple of short experiences that talks about the various things that experiences, at least the way they put it into words. One person said, "It was as if I had stepped through my eyelids. I sat up and I was in awe of how clear everything appeared. I had worn glasses or contacts my entire life, so I was amazed at the sharpness of my room around me and the vividness of the colors. I could perceive an energy surrounding everything." That short sentence, he encapsulated it all. Everything is energy that you get to see, and what you were like in the physical doesn't have any bearing. I mean, he had trouble seeing, but everything was clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. After what seemed like hours, but could only have been minutes, my grandfather said, "You shouldn't be here. It's not your time yet. You must go back." And then I felt the warm, strong arms gently pushing me back. Another, you know, classic theme.
Oh,
yep. Another person said, "With a sudden whoosh, it was like I was on super fast elevator going up through a tunnel. Ahead only darkness, when suddenly there was a very bright dim light far away, but very close straight ahead of me." There's
the second elevator then.
Yeah, and also a lot of the experiences talk about at the beginning, you're saying, they might be saying, "Uh-oh," because it's like total darkness,
yeah.
You know. And then, but then, like off in a distance, like they're not going to show you the light right away,
yeah.
But you see it and you move towards it. So that's apparently what happens. Another person writes, "After I came out of my blank state, I found myself floating above my house, about 50 feet in the air, rapidly ascending upward.
I had another blackout, and the next thing I knew, I was in space looking at the Earth in, in its entirety.
That is cool.
It's quick moving. I remember thinking how strange it was that I was up here when my body was still on the car seat. I also noticed that I didn't feel bad anymore. And then I saw my grandmother, who had died 15 years earlier of a long and cruel illness. Tom, you have one there that the woman recounts an ND that she had when she was 11 years old. I really like the story, if you would.
I like how this one ends, actually. And here she says, I was 11 years old when it happened. I am now a grandmother of 52, and the experience I had has never left me. It was the most profound thing that has ever happened to me, and what is more, it still affects me. I have no fear of death, and I do not grieve for the dead or dying because I know they have gone on to another dimension. Briefly, I was like most kids of 11 mucking about on my way home from school that day. I stepped off the pavement without looking into the path of an oncoming car, which hit me in the back. I was thrown across the road and remember thinking that it was going to hurt when I landed. I heard a loud snap and saw a flash, at which moment I was rising out of my body at rapid speed. I felt no pain as I seemed to lift higher and higher. It became dark, and I was still traveling rapidly. There was an overwhelming sense of being loved, like the whole universe loved me. I came to a stop in front of some sort of barrier which looked like a privet hedge. There were flowers growing in the hedge, which were huge, much bigger than my head. Beyond the hedge, there were people looking out at me. They seemed very interested. Then there was a lady. I call her the Shining One. She was beautiful. I knew immediately that she was hundreds of years old, but had the face of someone perhaps in their 30s. I was happy to be there. The feeling of love and peace was beautiful. You must return, the lady said, although I never once saw her mouth move. I went to object, at which moment I found myself in a great deal of pain, back on the side of the road, with ambulance men and a huge crowd of people around me. I learned quickly that my experience was something I should keep quiet about, as folks looked at me strangely if I spoke about it. But I won't ever forget it. And as I grew older, I realized that many more folk than myself had had a similar experience. The experience has helped me, though, through some of my darkest times in my life. Death is not the end.
Wow.
So, grandmother, this happened when she was 11, so, you know, over 40 years, and it's still like day one to change her life, you know, forever. That's what we've been talking about. Beautiful story.
That's a great story.
Yeah. You want to read about the one with the kidney condition?
Oh, yeah. I was hospitalized for a severe kidney condition, and I was in a coma for approximately 1 week. My doctors were extremely uncertain as to whether I would live. During this period, when I was unconscious, I felt as though I were lifted right up, just as though I didn't have a physical body at all. A brilliant white light appeared to me. The light was so bright that I could not see through it, but going into its presence was so calming and wonderful. There is just no experience on earth like it. In the presence of the light, the thoughts or words that came into my mind, do you want to die? And I replied that I didn't know, since I knew nothing about death. Then the white light said, come over this line and you will learn. I felt I knew where the line was in front of me, although I could not actually see it. As I went across the line, the most wonderful feelings came over me, feelings of peace, tranquility, a vanishing of all worries.
Wow.
The theme, most of these that we've been reading, you know, people encounter deceased loved ones. There's one here from a book by Chris Carter, kind of a classic, Science and the Near-Death Experience. He writes, 15 years ago, when I was 59, I had a heart attack. An iron band around my chest was getting tighter and tighter. The doctor came, and when he left to ring for an ambulance, he warned me not to move on any account. Then everything became warm and bright and light and beautiful. The iron band was gone, and I was traveling along a tunnel. Gradually, there was a brilliant light at the end, really brilliant, and I knew I was going right into the glowing heart of that light. But then I saw a group of people between me and the light. I knew them. My brother, who had died a few years before, was gesticulating delightfully as I approached. Their faces were so happy and welcoming. Then somehow my mother became detached from the group. She shook her head and waved her hand, rather like a windscreen wiper. And I stopped, and I heard the doctor say, "She's coming around." And I was in my bed, and the doctor and my husband were there, and my first words to the doctor were, "Why did you bring me back?" you know, another example of people not wanting to come back, you know.
You know, Bob, I still recall, and I've told this story before, but when I had my son, I was told that they had almost lost me. I had no blood pressure. And later, you know, with this group, I was like, well, gee whiz, where was my near-death experience? But then I recalled, it was a dream, but I thought, wait a minute, maybe that dream was my near-death experience, because I was, at the time, baking was my profession. I was in the grocery store a lot. In the dream, I was pushing a grocery cart, it was empty, through these doors that open like pushing hospital doors open, and behind each set of doors, the light was getting brighter and brighter, and I was so excited to be going that way, and I was like thinking, everything's in perfect order. Everything's in perfect order. You know, life is good. And then the next thing I know, I was back. But later I thought, maybe that was it. Because they say when you're given a lot of medications or sedation drugs, that maybe that would suppress your near-death experience. So I thought maybe I had it after the fact, or maybe I was recalling a dream from in that moment.
Yeah.
But it was
when
peacefulness.
The drugs would have a physical effect on your body so that you couldn't appreciate the entire out-of-body or near-death experience because it's changing you physiologically.
But it's just that all those sensations and the light, it was like, yeah. And then I was like, why am I back? You know, of course, but I had a bit. I had to come back.
That's for sure. Well, I almost lost both of them.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting point. I mean, your near-death experience is like a dream, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you just didn't interpret it as a classic near-death experience. You interpreted it as a dream, but similar to
I could, and it stayed with me now 34, almost 34 years later.
Wow.
Just happened.
Cool. Well, I mean, there's a lot more. I mean, there's a ton of experiences we could do, you know, another show like that. But I think we should start paying more attention to these experiences, especially when they come back with downloads of information that a lot of them do, that we tend to not pay attention to or dismiss, but maybe we should be heeding what they say, because there's probably wisdom that we can learn.
Not only that, they are very much alike the dream visits. I mean, they have the same attributes. You remember them as if they were real, because they were. The NDE is real.
Yeah.
Going into what may really be the reality, this may be the dream. And then when we're dreaming, we're leaving this reality, we're going into that dream state, which may be the reality. So it's really kind of like the same thing.
And the key thing to always to bear in mind when people tend to dismiss it is that at the time that you should not be having any clear and lucid thinking, you are. You know, you have no brain waves. If you're hallucinating, how do you have all these clear visions and everything, you understand everything, you know, you're like hyper alert. Doesn't make any sense.
True.
I think the only explanation is that you really are visiting another world.
Mm.
All right, do you want to take us to another world?
Now we ask our listeners to join us in our global peace prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, Sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.